Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hello there. I'm Eric. Albin.
Hey, Eric.
You're Albin.
Hi, Eric.
And now listen, what? We have to warn the audience here. Today's a big day.
It is.
Today, it's an all-Yale panel.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Metaxas, class of 84. Naomi Wolf, class of 84. John Zmirak, class of 86, I think.
Yeah.
And then Monday, class of Michael Knowles.
Oh, that's
class
right.
Class of, like, I don't know, 5 minutes ago. But okay. The idea that in spite of the Marxist indoctrination and cultural pressure at a place like Yale, nonetheless, people could escape the system or gulag, as it were, and be free thinkers. It's an extraordinary thing. So in a couple of minutes, we're talking to Naomi Wolf. Ladies and gentlemen, remember I promised that I would find out who was responsible for getting me kicked off of YouTube with my 220,000 subscribers and how that was monetizing everything. We traced it. It wasn't easy. Albin is a real incredible detective, and we discovered that it was all the fault of my classmate from Yale, 1984, Naomi Wolf. And we thought, let's see if we can coax her onto the program. I'm not telling her why she's on the program. I just wanted to surprise her. And here she is, Naomi Wolf. Naomi, welcome.
Thank you. This is terrible news.
No, it's not terrible news. It's why you're a hero, because you didn't even know this. And this is why I thought, wouldn't it be fun to surprise you with this happy news? First of all, before anybody says anything else, let me introduce you more properly. You're the author of many books, The End of America, which is really, unfortunately, very important to where we are today. Also the author of Outrageous, and you're the CEO of DailyClout.io, Daily Clout. Okay, Naomi, you didn't know this, but just to set up our larger conversation, because of course it applies to you and being knocked off of Twitter, which you were. We were being bothered by YouTube because they have these creepy communist community standards. Not that there's anything wrong with being oppressive and Marxist. It's a free country. So we tried to comply, and so we wouldn't post things where people talked about, you know, obscene things like whether we should have vaccine passports or whether the election had been conducted in the way that the founders set up so that, you know, people can actually choose their leaders. We tried not to post anything really controversial and evil on YouTube. But every now and again, something would slip past us and they gave us a strike here, a strike there. And we were, I think, days away, literally, from finally being cleared. And they went back 2 months to find the interview that I did with you. Remember that offensive interview where we were just spewed, you know, profanities and stuff? You remember that interview? They found that interview where we discussed vaccine passports, and they said, aha, boom, strike three. And they took down our entire channel. So I wanted to say that is where we are in America. You already know this. It's why you're doing everything you're doing. But I say that, and I'm not kidding, with pride in our being kicked off and in your being the ostensible reason that they gave, because we should be proud to be censored by the cultural Marxists. So I thought I'd start there and then say, hey, how's your summer going?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me just, this is head blowing information or mind blowing information. I'm so sorry. I think I had heard, you know, that there had been some issues with Twitter and your show. I'm sorry, with YouTube and your show.
Yeah.
But I had no idea. They verbally told you that I was the reason, or they said?
Well, we forced them to say, like, hey, what's the issue? And they cited the interview I did with you, I think April 2nd or something like that. But the point is, look, it's largely irrelevant. They're looking for anything. You know, Stalin said, you know, show me the man and I will find you the crime. They just wanted to ban me and the Eric Metaxas show from YouTube, just as they wanted to ban you from Twitter, because evidently we're dangerous We went to Yale. We're smart. We speak the cultural language. And we see through the baloney, and we talk about it. By God's grace, we have the ability to do that, and they don't like it. And so that's why you were banned from Twitter. And I'm sure I really am curious. I want to ask you, because we haven't spoken with you on the program since then, what's going on with you? Being banned from Twitter for somebody like you is really significant. I'm ashamed that I'm still on Twitter.
Oh, no, don't. I mean, don't be. We're kind of trading censorship platforms. I've also been frozen now from YouTube, or Daily Cloud has been frozen from YouTube. But I see kind of a pattern. I think we're very threatening cultural commentators, of course, but I do see a pattern, which is that there are a couple of real no-go areas. And you know, vaccine passports were the reason, or a video about vaccine passports YouTube said to you was the reason, which I think is very, very interesting, because YouTube froze us on May 31st, Daily Clout, when we uploaded a video of a citizen in Oregon, in a small town in Oregon. Her name is Luna Singer. She's wheelchair bound. She's disabled. And nonetheless, or, you know, she talked about how being wheelchair bound and disabled did not prevent her from lobbying successfully with Senator Kim Thatcher, a Republican of Oregon, for her bill 872 to ban vaccine passports. So the dial keeps circling around vaccine passports and around Dr. Fauci and gain of function research, because Twitter, as you may recall, or you may not know this, because Twitter told everyone that I was banned for vaccine misinformation. The real reason is that I posted a video of my husband, who's a PI, reading Dr. Ralph Barrick's CV, in which he clearly identified gain of function research and his work on a gain of function committee. And of course, Dr. Fauci had been telling Congress that he had never funded gain of function research. And it was right there. You know, the millions of dollars were right there. The gain of function research was right there. And that got 74,000 views before Twitter suspended me. And then, and I'm almost done with my riff about this, then a Twitter spokesperson went proactively, like no one really knew I was suspended, but Twitter made sure everyone knew I was suspended and gave the wrong reason, vaccine misinformation. They went to all these major news outlets like the BBC, Yahoo, and told them that I had been suspended for vaccine misinformation. So I'm glad you haven't yet had the global reputational attack via Twitter's communications office, but I'm horrified that, you know, that YouTube suspended you. And I can't help noticing that vaccine passports, which are a goldmine for tech companies, including Microsoft, and Dr. Fauci and gain of function research, seem to be these kind of radioactive areas.
Well, listen, I'm jealous that I did not merit being, you know, offered up to Yahoo and BBC and whatever. Honestly, we've all got to be louder and braver. But it just thrills me, honestly, that we're over the same target roughly. Because, look, this is crazy. I mean, they say vaccine misinformation or whatever. How dare anyone in America tell us what to say or not to say? I can spread false information all day long. In other words, this is the very idea that there's somebody policing what we say. I mean, if you're saying things that are genuinely dangerous, I think most Americans would say, no, no, no. In this case, this is important. We know this is nonsense. We know that the information being spread by the official people on vaccines is misinformation, disinformation.
Yeah.
We know that. So the very people policing this are the people that have vested interests, and they are frankly lying, and they're trying to demonize anybody who even questions them. We're not simply spreading information. We're questioning them, asking them to clarify. They refuse to do it. So listen, we're just thrilled that you're on this. But what have you been doing since you've been on Twitter, since you were knocked off of Twitter? What's going on in your life? Where are you today?
Thank you for asking. Well, it was very, very relaxing to be off of Twitter, but also, you know, as I mentioned, pretty extraordinary and shocking and damaging to have this, you know, big tech company assiduously going to my employers, because I write for, you know, The Guardian, I write for The Daily Beast, I write for these publications, and telling them that I was not credible.
Okay, I didn't make that connection. So that is a very big deal. That is chilling, but it's chilling, and it makes you understand you're living in a Marxist cultural climate. What else is this?
Well, I want to go somewhere very specific with this, Eric, because you kindly invited me on your show. I am now inviting you into Donald Trump's lawsuit because I've joined, or I'm seeking to join, my application is under review, this class action lawsuit, which not just former President Trump, whom I didn't vote for, with whom I don't agree, but I agree that he has the right to, you know, not be censored and silenced and defamed by big tech companies, and thousands of other people are joining forces to sue big tech, America First, policy, very good lawyers, and you know, other distinguished attorneys are bringing forward this class action suit, and I think it's very, very important because it is damaging to you with a podcast to, you know, be deplatformed. It's damaging reputationally if they decide to tell people the reason was vaccine misinformation. It's certainly damaging and scary and unprecedented that the White House spokesperson, Jen Psaki, is identifying American citizens by name.
But how can Americans not rise up en masse on something like this? I mean, how have we allowed ourselves to be so ignorant, to become so ignorant of the basics of what American freedom is and has been? Folks, I'm talking to Naomi Wolf. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm talking to Dr. Naomi Wolf, author of The End of America and Outrages, and the CEO of Daily Clout. Naomi, we're talking about crazy things. You, you know, have, I guess, identified as a feminist and a liberal, but the world has changed so dramatically that the people in the Democratic Party today, they don't really seem to push back against this kind of censorship and this kind of thing. They seem to have morphed into hard left radicals who feel, wait, if we've got the power, we're all for censorship. In the 50s, when it was being used against us, we cared about freedom. Suddenly, we're not even going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say you're wrong. I think it's even worse. And this is so painful for me. Like, my conversations these days are like, you know, confession, or they're so morally painful. You're right. I think it's worse than the Democratic leadership is tolerating wholesale censorship of voices critical of medical coercion, conservative voices, a former president, and so on. I think a lot of this direction is coming from the DNC and coming from the White House. And that's why it is important to have these lawsuits, because then you get discovery and you see what kind of collusion is there. I mean, for Dr. Fauci to be chatting with, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and coordinating messaging of a health agency paid for with our tax dollars, with a tech company that is going to have double-digit billion-dollar profits from lockdowns, right? That is, you know, incredibly questionable and needs to be investigated, you know, if not criminal. So I think that, unfortunately, you know, the Democrats won. They want to make it a one-party state. They're doing it in alliance with big tech, maybe in alliance with other superpowers that are not our friends, who want to see us, you know, a one-party state that's biddable. And they're doing it systematically. I mean, it's not going to end. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's so clear. They're going to silence all dissenting voices, and then they're going to start ramping up punishments And they're going to start linking dissent. I mean, it's a social credit system that we talked about in the video that got us deplatformed, right? Or that got you deplatformed. I'm so sorry. But it's going to go to professional consequences, income consequences. You're going to see more people going through what I think Jordan Peterson went through, which is, you know, Google suspending them so they can't email, or I think Ben Shapiro, again, I need to check, but I believe he said that Amazon, you know, servers wouldn't host him anymore. I mean, there's an infrastructure of tech that doesn't just support our podcasts and our communications and videos. You know, it supports businesses. It supports, you know, people being able to email their mom. And you're going to start seeing, just like they're trying to create vaccine refugees who are unwilling to get vaccinated with an experimental technology, you're going to start seeing dissent refugees who are singled out. And you were asking me, how is this happening? Why are Americans not up in arms? I can tell you that because I get these emails every day. When I got deplatformed from Twitter, I got so many emails from respectable journalists saying, I support you. I'm so sorry this happened to you. And when I said, okay, well, will you please say that publicly? They're like, I can't. I'm afraid they'll deplatform me. Or when it comes to my reporting on lockdowns and on vaccines and on all the things we're dealing with, this medical tyranny, I get journalists saying, I really respect what you're doing. Then I'm like, well, will you report on it? They're like, no, I have a mortgage. I have children. So
okay, look,
it is 1930.
You should send them a coward t-shirt. Honestly, because I wrote a book about Germany in the 30s, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, if you do not speak up, let's be really clear. You're part of the problem. When you say, I can't do it because of this, this, and this, let's be clear. You are part of the problem. Don't pretend it's like the Nazi saying, well, I blew the brains out of the elderly Jewish woman because I was just taking orders. I had to do it. You didn't have to do it. There was a price to pay if you didn't do it. You were unwilling to pay the price. I can't believe, Naomi, that I'm saying that this is where we are. When I talk to people all the time and they just act like, if I was alive at that time, I would have stood up to the Nazis. I would have said, well, you're alive now. And you're not doing anything. You're not posting publicly about it. You're not standing in solidarity. You're part of the problem. And will you wake up when it's too late, like people like Niemöller, Martin Niemöller, who was with the Nazis, and then suddenly he woke up, but it was too late. By the time he woke up, it was game over.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're 1,000% right, and you know better than most people how historically relevant that time is and how quickly it takes. 6 months, like 6 months from now, you know, when they say they're deploying, you know, volunteers to knock on your door, I've seen those contracts. As I, you know, often mention, my husband's a PI. I've seen those contracts for who those people are. They're not volunteers. They're going to be paid $30 an hour. They're harvesting data. And, you know, some of them have like really scary backgrounds, right? They're not people you want to have knocking on your door. They're there to get information. You know, there's public resistance to a vaccine passport. So they are going to create a digital database, come hell or high water, by knocking on your door, talking to your neighbors, you know, accosting your kids when they, you know,
this is why if you can have a gun, folks, honestly, you should never let anyone on your property like this. Threaten them. Because this is where we are today. Do not play along. These people are the enemies of your children and the enemies of freedom. And if you don't stand up, it is on you. Just saying. We'll be right back talking to Naomi Wolf. Don't go away. Hey there, folks. We're talking to Naomi Wolf. Naomi, we're talking about some heavy stuff here. I guess I want to go back to this idea that, you know, the reason, one of the reasons that I'm a conservative is not because I agree with every conservative person, but I think many of us have kind of smelled this in the wind, that this is where things are going. And when people talk about, you know, American values or whatever, the question is, do they really mean it? Or the moment they can change course, they'll change course. And I think that that's kind of where we are, not just with the Democrats, but with, you know, what I call rhinos. These are people that they don't care about values. They don't really believe in these values, and they're just kind of drifting along, and they understand what they need to say. But it is particularly horrifying. I'm normally, you know, talking to conservatives about the Republicans who are less than useless. But is there anybody in the Democratic Party who understands the threat to every American? I mean, are anybody that you're in touch
anyone
with?
Anyone in the Democrat? Oh, wow. I mean, it's interesting. I hear from people, but they're scared, you know, and these are different people than the journalists who are professionally scared. These are people around me who are starting to realize something's terribly wrong, are in an existential crisis. I mean, I talked to Dave Rubin yesterday, and he's journeyed away from liberalism to conservatism. And as I was talking to him, I started to tear up because I was realizing this is like an exile, a psychological exile. And I think many people from the left are in that kind of existential crisis, but I don't think they're brave enough, especially now. I think it's easier to be brave, honestly, if you're a libertarian or a conservative right now against these things than if you're in the tent.
Sure.
Because I'm hearing things, I'm talking about 1933 again, I'm hearing things from intelligent leftists and liberals, thoughtful, educated people that I never thought I'd hear in my life. Like, don't send me information. You know, like, I don't want to know. I don't want to see the peer-reviewed studies that contradict what the spokespeople are saying. Don't, you know, or sentences like, don't you know that most experts don't agree with you? You know, like, most experts didn't agree with Galileo. You know, most experts didn't agree with abolitionists. You know, they're like, that's how history moves forward.
No, but that's the point. Sense. That's exactly the point. I've written about Galileo in the book coming out in the fall. And it's comedy because Galileo, everybody thinks it was the church. Actually, it wasn't the church. It was Aristotelians in the universities. And it's kind of complicated. But the issue is they refused to look through his telescopes because they knew that if they looked through the telescopes, it would be clear as a bell. So they refused. So they scorned the telescope. They scorned the whole thing. They had to make fun of him in the way that they have to make fun of anyone whom they don't like. And they think, well, I don't have an argument, so I'll just say, you're a bigot, you're a racist, you're this, you're that, you're a Trump supporter, whatever they need to use, because the arguments have fled. They have no arguments.
Right.
But that's a chilling moment.
It's a terrifying moment, and terrible things happen. As Heine said, where they burn books, soon they will burn people. I hope it's Heine. You will correct me if
it's
wasn't.
It's Heinrich Heine. Actually, it's funny because when I discovered that quote, I thought, this was 100 years. This is the German poet, right, Heinrich Heine, who wrote this 100 years before the Nazis. Wow.
Right.
It's
a terrifying moment, and I'm actually getting chills talking about it because you see it in public discourse. Like, when people came at me, or, you know, Matt Gaetz of CNN, they keep saying she's bonkers, but they don't refute my arguments. They don't
They're scared
debate me. And I keep inviting them to debate me, and they won't do it, right? It's all invective. And seeing this in mainstream media, not just with me, but with important news stories, Rand Paul did the right thing in asking Dr. Fauci whether he wanted to retract what he said and claiming he had not funded gain-of-function research. The evidence is in. I mean, we talked about it. I was deplatformed for it. You know, Rand Paul has it in his dossier. So many scientists can attest to it. It's on the NIH website. They funded gain-of-function research. And instead of addressing or asking questions of Dr. Fauci, MSNBC and, you know, CNN and all these news sites were like, he's so wacko. He's so out there. You know, let's talk about this pop star who's 18, who we can get on and make her agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, it is not a mature democracy anymore. And when people start calling names instead of engaging with the evidence or debate, you're not heading toward totalitarianism, you're in totalitarianism, and then anyone can be otherized and anything can happen. Like, this is where we're at. When you have the Enlightenment and you have debate and you're grounded in facts, you have to have policy that is restrained by facts. It can't go too far. Someone will say, where's the evidence? This is crazy. And that's why we keep coming back from the brink, right? Like, you know, with the communist witch hunts and so on, you know, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? Or any craziness. Like, people go off the rails in national leadership all the time. But when the Enlightenment says you need to provide the evidence or we need to scrutinize it, you get hearings, you get trials, you get Watergate, you get the Pentagon Papers and so on. Now we're in a time where any kind of corruption or brutality can take place. People can be disappeared, right? And everyone will just say, well, that's ridiculous. Or, you know, well, she's a wacko who says that. And that's what you and I are experiencing. First, we're silenced. Right. Or even Rand Paul is kind of being silenced and marginalized to just a few outlets. And then whatever evidence, you know, can be brought forward is discounted because they don't want to look in the telescope.
Well, Rand Paul, I have to say, he is one of the tiny handful of heroes out there today. And he will be president of the United States by the grace of God at some point. He is the kind of person we need. And I was astonished at the way Fauci responded or didn't respond. Let's be blunt. I think Fauci is scared to death. He knows he could go to jail. He could be threatened with jail time. He could be as vilified in American culture as he has been lionized. He could be Dr. Death when this stuff comes out. So the idea, to my mind, is that these people have used their power to play this game, hoping the clock would run out and they would never be discovered. I think they're in for a rude awakening. I pray that that's the case. We're going to be right back talking to Naomi Wolf. Don't go away.
Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. It's an all Yale day on the Eric Metaxas Show. Naomi Wolf, class of 84, Eric Metaxas, class of 84, John Zmirak, class of 87. I think kind of funny that some of us escaped the intellectual ideological gulag that was Yale, if I can put it charmingly. Naomi, what Fauci said or what he didn't say, it's a scary thing when you can sit in the Senate and talk to a senator, and the senator not only is a medical doctor who has the facts, but he's even trying to get you to say, maybe I made a mistake, it's more complicated, and just stonewall. Where do you think this goes?
I mean, it's very ugly. Right here on my phone, I have publications from Vanity Fair to the National Academy of Sciences to the MIT Technology Review, detailing millions of dollars of funding from the NIH to what is called by the conveners gain of function research. You know, there was a 2015 seminar that NIH and NIAID officials attended that Dr. Ralph Barrick presented at called gain of function research, where they were basically saying, and this was after the pause, where they were basically saying the optics of this are bad, the language is bad, we're going to get in trouble, it's too hot over here, let's call it something else. I mean, I'm summarizing. And, you know, after that, the funding went to Wuhan to do very similar research. So it's like, you know, it's not hidden. I mean, you can read it.
I guess my question is, what is the problem? Why would it make sense for Fauci to just say, yeah, here's what happened? Well, I mean, what are they fearing?
Well, it's a huge problem. I mean, first of all, he's committed perjury if he lied to the Senate.
Whole point is that he lied, so now he has to cover the lie? I mean, wouldn't it make it's like Watergate. If you just tell the truth, forget about the cover-up.
It's too late, though. He lied to the Senate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's jail time and a fine. You know, that's a felony, as I recall. And rightly so. You know, we can't have people lying to the Senate. So I think he's probably getting legal advice that he's not following. I think clearly, having worked, you know, with a presidential staff and a vice president, he's clearly not in the loop, or there are clearly two camps now, and he's not being given the right talking points. He's not being coordinated with the CDC. They're kind of letting him hang himself in a way, and that is not a threat. Google, Microsoft, YouTube, it's a figure of speech. And so
but
the other
I,
thing
but I
is
thought of it literally, I thought of it literally. I just want to be clear in my mind.
Well, I'll leave that alone. But I think that apart from needing to, so he needs to cover up his initial lie and say, and play with words and say, well, my staff said it's not gain of function research, or, you know, it's not defined in Omaha as gain of function research.
But wait a minute.
Research,
why do you think, because you said that they're whatever, hanging him out to dry, or they're letting him hang himself. Why do you think they, who is the they, and why do you suppose they would do that? I'm not clear if you have an idea on that.
Well, you know, this is intuitive reading the tea leaves as a former political consultant, but there are various big powers that are not all aligned in this situation. There's the White House that has seen what he's hiding, of course, because they have lawyers and they have researchers and they have staff, and they're probably going, holy S, you know, this is terrible. He did fund gain of research. You know, there's so much documentation of it, and he may well have funded the research that has led to this pandemic. That is a possibility, but he certainly continued funding research that Americans, if they knew about it, would be horrified. Barrick was doing making pathogens more infectious in UNC, and they were using bat colonies in Maryland. Right? I mean, this was right here on our shores. You know, we're almost lucky that, you know, we didn't have an outbreak here because of the research that was being done right here in the United States before they farmed it out to, you know, a country where they have much laxer, you know, limitations on things. So it looks like the White House and the CDC are realizing what a liability he is, and realizing that politically, the Republicans are going to win the midterms and the next presidential election if their message is freedom. If their message is, I'm going to take the masks off your children, I'm not going to ever lock you down again, I don't have the right. As Kristi Noem, whom I heard yesterday here in South Dakota at Freedom Fest, said, I don't have the right to take away people's inalienable rights, their constitutional rights. That's a winning message. And Fauci's saying the opposite. And then there's whoever's behind Fauci at a meta level. And it looks like some nefarious combination of Bill Gates and the Davos crowd and, you know, China. And their constellation is not about what's best for the American people. Their constellation, you know, is about getting as many untested experimental vaccines in the arms of Americans as possible, masking children, making them obedient, crushing the United States. So
I'm assuming you haven't read C.S. Lewis's book, That Hideous Strength. But the level of creepiness that we're seeing here, I have no problem saying it strikes me as end times demonic. It's really,
demonic.
Really creepy. And I just want to say that, honestly, today, I think it was this morning, I went on Google Maps, and they'll have this thing where you could click a button and it's like the traffic map or the satellite map. There's a number of options. One of the options was, there's like maybe four or five options. One of them is COVID. I thought, why has this strange thing made its way like a pathogen into the culture so that everywhere I go, there's signage about this? I cannot look at a map without getting reminded about COVID. I don't know why it's on there, but the reason I'm bringing this up, Naomi, we've just got a couple minutes here, but it strikes me as looking nefarious, as though actors at Davos and in these kinds of places have put something in place, and that now we're talking about variants, and we're talking, it really does seem like everybody's worst nightmare from a year ago, like here we are, and it's tracking.
Right. I mean, I know the answer to why you see it everywhere, but, you know, I'll have to come back another time to give you the details. It's the COVID-19 Response Project, which is launched in spring of last year. It's all the major tech companies, and they all had double-digit billion profits. They're not going to let this thing go, you know, driving us all indoors, driving us onto Zoom, driving our kids onto digital education. And, you know, when I mentioned the unholy alliance with the Davos crowd and China, not everybody wants America to thrive. Some people really plan for us not to be a superpower, and we're inconvenient. Freedom is inconvenient. So you're seeing all these signs everywhere, A, because it mints money for tech companies and pharma, but also B, because for other interests, American freedom and the Constitution is incredibly annoying and inconvenient and threatens their profits and their plans for the future. And that's why they need to break our kids. That's why there's this focus on turning our children into little robots.
This is heavy stuff. We do have to get you back on here because I really, there's so much more to talk about, and you're so knowledgeable in all of these things. We've just we've got less than a minute. What are you doing in the next month or so? Are you able to travel? Is this nonstop speechifying about these important things? What's going on with your in your life?
Thank you for asking. Well, you know, I'm like you. I mean, we should talk because I literally pray continually, you know, as they say, and I never used to, because I do think these forces are so demonic. I mean, they're not like on this plane anymore. It's clear, and I'm not trying to be like metaphysical unnecessarily.
Logic has led you to that. Logic. You look at everything and you think what it it's it sure seems like it has to be something bigger.
Well, there could be, and you know, you mentioned C.S. Lewis, there could be a really beautiful conclusion. Like, if there are demonic powers, it must mean there are angelic powers.
Well, that's a
fact. And if there are these negative forces creating this dystopia, you know, both on the material level and a spiritual level, it must mean that we have more ability than we think.
Boy, do I want to keep talking to you. Now we're out of time. I know you have to go, but I just want to tell you, that is what led me to faith. I read a book, People of the Lie, by M. Scott Peck. He wrote Road Less Traveled. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the demonic clearly, I thought, well, if a Harvard psychiatrist believes in evil, maybe I can believe in good. So we've sort of ended on a positive note. Naomi, we're so grateful for you. To be continued. From the frying pan into the fire, as they say. John Zmirak, my friend, my guest, my interlocutor. We have to get more serious. You have an article out more recently about something I was actually involved in. I was at Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA event down in Florida, Tampa. And I was only there roughly for a day. But the day that I arrived, there was a big contretemps, brouhaha, to do about a porn actress. Now, can you call a porn actress a porn act? Like they say porn star, porn actress. What are they really? They're not. They're certainly not actresses, and they're hardly stars, except
they're video prostitutes. They're video prostitutes.
Well, you know what? You can take two sides of these things in a sense. You could either be angry at the horror of it, or you can be sad at the horror of it. It's heartbreaking. This woman is pushing 50, and she's making some kind of a living, and she puts herself out there as a conservative businesswoman. Can you even imagine what the world has come to? But she was asked to leave this Turning Point USA event. And people like Ben Dominic at The Federalist had a problem with that. I talked to Michael Knowles about this. We're going to air that on Monday. But your article is spectacular. What do you say on the whole issue?
Well, thanks. The title is – it's over at stream.org. The title is Anorexia, Porn, and Ben Dominic. Now, Ben Dominic said basically, don't be a bunch of prudes. We need to be a big tent movement in the conservative movement. My point was, let's leave divine revelation out of this. Let's even leave natural law out of this, okay? Let's just think about the public good. if you're running a political movement, presumably you're trying to do something good for the public. If you're going to admit that you're trying to harm the public, you're going to face some PR challenges.
Okay, now the point being that it doesn't have to be like some religious objection that we're being prudes. Right. We are simply speaking as citizens of the United States. Go ahead.
What would be good for the country, yeah. Well, our birth rate is falling. And if it weren't for mass immigration of unskilled laborers sneaking in from neighboring countries, our population would actually be shrinking. To me, the birth rate, not the GDP, the birth rate ought to be the metric on whether a country is doing well or not. Do the people in the country think it's worth passing on the gift of life? Is it too difficult or unpleasant or depressing for them, for the species even to reproduce itself?
Now, by the way, you didn't reference George Weigel's book, The Cube in the Cathedral, but about 15 years ago, he wrote a whole book in part talking exactly about what you just said.
Okay, good. So let's forget the GDP. I don't care what the GDP is. I care what the birth rate is. That's the kind of thing a real conservative movement, a real right wing,
correct,
would be focused on. We don't care if Jeff Bezos can gold plate the toilets on his rocket into space, which sadly will probably land him back safely. We don't care about that. We care whether families can reproduce themselves.
Okay, hold on. So that's the bullet point, folks. Hang on to that bullet point. We'll be right back with John Zmierak. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to John Zmierak. John, we're talking about a lot of important stuff. You just made this beautiful statement. The way you can view a culture is, do the people mainly want to have kids? Do they feel hopeful about the future?
That's the vote count that we should be looking at. It's impossible to falsify. What is the birth rate? Is it falling or rising? Is the population at least replacing itself? On average, is every couple having two kids or a little more? And the answer is no. Our birth rate is falling. It's not as bad as Japan's. In Japan, the human race has just curled up in a ball and decided not to even have sex. Our rate of teenage pregnancy is falling because teenagers are not even bothering to fornicate. Now, normally the great challenge of every society is to keep the teenagers off each other long enough for them to become adults and get married and have kids. Our kids are not even copulating. The boys are all just sunk in the porn world.
Groping
other people is out. This auto-groping seems to be the trend. Pornography is killing interaction between the sexes. Think about it. Dealing with another human being's needs and whining and questions and personality, it's a real pain. Dealing with the opposite sex is a real pain because, in a way, it seems like men and women are like natural enemies doomed to mate. Imagine cobras and mongooses had to mate in order to produce more of the same. There are the differences between the sexes, exacerbated by the fall of man, make mating a challenge. Well, our society has said, well, we'll just offer homosexuality. We'll try to destroy both the biological sexes. We'll offer to produce 46 new sexes in case you need any of them, in case you want to try something different. If you want to identify as a trans lesbian pony, that's okay, and the government will accommodate that and punish anyone who doesn't recognize your new fantasy status. So all of that together, pornography is to sex what bulimia is to eating. Let me repeat that. Pornography is, it's not like gluttony. It's like anorexia. You're looking at pictures. You're not doing the natural thing that your body wants to do. You're not doing the thing that nourishes your body or the human species. You're doing some other fantasy weird thing that produces and generates nothing. So what in my article at stream.org I said, imagine this were a culinary convention and a pro-anorexia cultist showed up. And there are pro-anorexia cults on the internet. They're referred to by Anna, A-N-A. And it's very sad. They're forums where girls with anorexia who don't want to change, who've decided they're going to stay with anorexia, where they trade pictures of their emaciated bodies and they reaffirm how good their decision is to be anorexic. It's similar to the transgender movement, except it hasn't got political power. Imagine an anorexia cultist showed up looking like a Holocaust survivor in a bikini, showing off her ribs and her emaciated body at a culinary conference. And she's promoting Don't Eat. Would the chefs there welcome her? Would the people selling, you know, coated pans and egg blends? No, they would not welcome her because she is against the thing that their movement relies on, people eating. Conservatives should not welcome porn activists because pornography attacks the thing that matters most to us, the family, the reproduction of the human species, parenting, the loving union of man and woman, ordained by God, reflected in nature. So leave natural law, leave sin out of it. Pornography is the enemy of the human species. I have an analogy in the article where I said an absolute libertarian would say we should be able to buy and sell strategic nuclear weapons. We should have that freedom. Free contract. I'm selling. He's buying. Why should Big Brother get in the way?
Yeah,
the
freedom, man. Is, freedom. More nukes.
Right, exactly. The Thank problem you. Is the freedom wouldn't last. Once the nuclear war happens,
you're just being a prude. John Zmierich, I'm calling you out. You're a prude. I want nukes. Why should you, with your religious objections to mass death, have anything to do with me fulfilling myself by buying some nukes, dude? Come on.
And the problem is that after the nuclear war, the bacteria and cockroaches that survived in the rubble would vote in socialism. So if you want freedom, and I want freedom, you want freedom that lasts.
Right.
More than a few minutes.
Right.
Okay. Buying and selling nuclear weapons is not a legitimate human right that any libertarian should support because it goes against the survival of the human race. Porn is the same. Porn is against the survival of the human race. It is replacing sexual interaction among a whole generation of people. It is going, the birth rate is already falling in America. It's plummeting in places like Japan. What's big in Japan? Porn. Bizarre online animated porn. People aren't even dating anymore in Japan. So we oppose porn because it tends to wipe out the human race.
Well, I mean, that's one thing, John.
I think that's a pretty solid argument.
That's one thing. Porn also degrades women and degrades men. Let's be honest. I'm a father of a daughter. I'm the husband of a wife. I'm the son of a mother. If you love the women in your life and you have respect for women as God's creatures made in his image, pornography is a nightmare. It is a demonic version, parody of God's idea of what these wonderful women are. Let's be honest. We're talking to John Zmierich, folks. Why would you go away? I know you won't. We'll be right back. I'm talking to John Zmierich, and you get to listen. Okay, John, this is hard because this article that you wrote about what Ben Dominich said, it tempts me and you and many of us to want to, you know, kind of make fun of him and his point of view or make fun of this sad woman, this porn actress. But there's another side. I want to appeal to Ben Dominich. I've been on his podcast at the Federalist. I mean, he's a wonderful thinker and we agree on most things, but on this issue I just want to appeal to him to take what you said in your article at Stream more seriously and what Michael Knowles said in my interview with him, which will air Monday, more seriously. I actually think it's really important that we define, yeah, what does it mean to be a big tent party, and it does mean something. We don't want to just lose because we're purer than the other. But what you're talking about is really important, and I think we have to have this conversation in the culture. There's a divide now where libertarians seem to think that they're conservative, but they're really more Democrat or liberal than they are conservative, and you see it in issues like this. The idea that wanting to keep a porn actress who's making money off of pornography and gaming the system by saying she loves America, so she should come to the TPS. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's filled with young people. It's a student action summit. So the idea that Ben would feel that he needs to say that that's prudish, I guess I want him to take that seriously and really think about this. Honestly, don't just take be a knee jerk, you know, they're prudes and I'm not. But I also want to say in love to this poor woman, I mean, this is not the plan God has for you. I don't know her name. I don't remember her name. But I think we just have to be real and say to these people, like, you know, once we say you can't come to the thing, then forget about it and just say, this is not God's plan for you. He's got a better plan for you. This is heartbreaking. As a father and a husband and a son, it just breaks my heart. And I want us, particularly as Christians, but just as human beings, to say that. This is not about condemning somebody for moral choices. This is about our hearts breaking over someone condemning themselves through their moral choices. So that's my sermon, and we can move on.
Yeah, I guess what I want to say to libertarians is you have this exalted idea of human beings and their individual rights. Why would you want to foster movements that degrade human beings and present them as subhuman, that show only their animal side, cut off from the rest of their cells? In my column at stream.org, I quote a 1971 column by the great Irvin Kristol, where he goes into in great depth the case for censoring pornography. And he said that pornography reduces human beings to only their animal sexual side. Now, I have a metaphor. I thought I would. I left this out of the column, but when movies, you know, the way movies used to show people kissing and then they would cut away because you knew what happened next. Now they go all the way through, so you have to see Michael Douglas's wrinkled behind because, you know, you have to know.
Yeah, they get the camera. They get the camera up until you can actually see the fallopian tubes. Who wants to see that?
Right.
I don't want to see
that. I want that to happen. No, I want to be consistent. I want every dinner scene in a movie to end with the people on the toilet. And I want every detail of the toilet activity down to the toilet paper. I want all of that on film because we're not afraid of reality.
And you know what? That's brave filmmaking. Follow them.
That's right.
Into the bathroom. Don't be afraid of the, but don't be ashamed of your body. Let's see what happens after the food is digested. Be brave. Open your eyes, people.
And if you don't want that on film, you are a prude and you're anti-food. You're anti-food. You're an anorexic. You're the anorexic because you don't want the poop video. You don't want to see,
okay,
you know,
once somebody says poop video, we're going to have to move on. And unfortunately, you just used those two words. You know, John, it's funny, though, because you and I, we've lived in this reality, you know, ever since we were in college and before. We hear these really just insulting cliches in the media, right? Like, how many times have you heard a woman say, I'm not ashamed of my body? Who said you're ashamed of your body? I would think that if you're proud of your body, that's why you don't want the world to leer at it. But you hear this kind of, I'm not ashamed of my body. I'm not ashamed of the human body. Who ever said that? These, you know, these straw men are set up, and then we have to hear these cliches decade after decade.
But then we find out that Harvey Weinstein was blackmailing them to do nude scenes that they didn't really want to do. I mean, all those Miramax films, those artsy movies with nudity we saw that were presented in the 90s, we now find out Harvey Weinstein was basically, you know, berating and threatening the women to do nudity they were profoundly uncomfortable with, which traumatized them, which they still cry about sometimes. Salma Hayek. He pushed Salma Hayek to do a nude scene in the movie about Frida Kahlo by threatening to cancel the whole movie if she wouldn't do it because he wanted to see her naked doing a lesbian scene. That's what's really behind these
things.
Well,
what you just said is true.
Very few actresses are enthused about doing nude scenes. Read their interviews. They don't like it. It's uncomfortable. And you know why? Because it's not natural to be naked in front of dozens of strangers. That's not how we're built. We don't reproduce in mass ceremonies. It's not like, remember the Sun Myung Moon mass marriage at Madison Square Garden back
all
in the 70s?
All too well.
50,000 people getting married at Madison Square Garden. That felt weird and creepy because it wasn't natural. Public fornication isn't natural. That's why the only people who do it are those who are too stoned or drunk or desperate.
Well, that's correct. You know, Frida Kahlo, the idea of that, I mean, every time I see pictures of her with her mustache, I just don't understand what the fascination is with Frida Kahlo, except maybe the fact that she had a mustache. We are talking about important things, John Zmirak, and I want to remind my viewers and listeners, I'm not kidding, we need your help. We need you to spread these ideas. We post them on Rumble. We ask you to sign up to my newsletter so you'll get all this delivered to your inbox and you can share it with your friends. I really mean it. We're living at a time. People say, what can I do? That's what you can do. We do some really substantive interviews. We need you to help share them. Since we got kicked off YouTube, our views have dramatically plummeted. So we need your help. If you care about freedom and America and all that good stuff and the future, we ask you to help us. We also ask you, of course, to go to Nutramedics.com and to MyPillow.com and use the code Eric. We're grateful for you folks for helping us, but we do need your help. John Zmirak, we'll be right back with you. Folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, I want to stick on this, if you don't mind. What happened at Turning Point USA with this pornographic actress and the leaders there saying, no, you can't be here. You know, she wasn't some anonymous person. She was there as this pornographic actress entrepreneur, quote unquote, right?
Handing out business cards where you could, with her Twitter handle, where she posts pornography.
Yeah, and she's probably getting a ton of publicity off of us even talking about her. But I'm just here to say, folks, that, you know, she's her own pimp. So she makes it seem like I'm an empowered, free woman doing it. The whole thing's heartbreaking. But forget about her for a second. We have to have this conversation with conservatives like Ben Domenech. We have to help him to understand that. We're not being prudes here. This is a human issue, and it's an issue. If you love women and care about them, you really need to take this seriously. You must.
It's the opposite of prudery. The prudes are the pornographers. The pornographers are the ones stopping people from dating, from having sex, from getting married, having kids. They are providing a styrofoam substitute for food. Imagine people were handing out styrofoam bagels that had some sort of drug in them and then it made you feel really good. And they were giving it to teenagers instead of their lunch. And the teenagers weren't getting nourishment and they were gagging on the styrofoam but they didn't want regular food because they found they liked the styrofoam better. These are the people who are prudes, who are opposed to ordinary human sexuality and the reproduction of the species. They're the ones running around stopping it. So I think we need to keep that anorexia analogy in mind. That is the right analogy. It's people looking at pictures of food on the internet instead of eating. Pornography is the enemy of sex and therefore the enemy of the human species. It's a replacement. It's like artificial fillers, again, eating styrofoam. And if people start to prefer styrofoam to regular food, you're going to have a health crisis. And look at the birth rate in countries like Japan, the birth rate in countries like America. So when people as smart as Ben Domenech don't get this, I think it's a spiritual problem. I think that the demons are loose among us. And in my column, I actually have a little thing, LGBTQ, LMNOP, my name is Legion. And because I want to say that I think the porn and the LGBT movement are literally demonic. trace them back to their origin. Who was the first thinker in the West to argue for legal abortion? Do you know who he was? Who was the first thinker in the West since the ancient world? No, the Marquis de Sade. No. The Marquis de Sade was the first thinker.
Now, people, nobody knows his real story. It is so horrifying. Ladies and gentlemen, trust me. It is so horrifying. I wouldn't even read about him because it is so evil. We're talking about men raping their young children,
right?
Murdering their children. I mean, it's a level of demonic stuff. It's so ugly, you shouldn't even look at it. But when we talk about people like Marquis de Sade and this kind of sexuality, that's what we're talking about, ultimately.
The Marquis
de Sade, those kind of people.
The Marquis de Sade was a rich aristocrat who liked to kidnap and torture prostitutes, helpless women off the streets, went to prison for it. Bizarrely, French intellectuals have glorified him and taken his nauseating, repetitive, depressing, pornographic books, which are all about kidnapping and murdering. No safe, sane, consensual,
think
nothing.
Think about this, folks.
These are like journals of serial killers. The Marquis de Sade would have been a serial killer. Boy, but again, let me come back to the point. He was the first thinker to argue that abortion be legal. Who did he influence? He was a major influence on Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir. They explicitly cite him as an influence, and the origin of the feminism that Simone de Beauvoir promoted was the Marquis de Sade.
Thank you, John Smirak. Folks, thanks for listening.